Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday afternoon, January the 30th, we're going to talk about a new Pew Research survey on evolution and the Big Bang Theory, what the average American believes. Now, it doesn't appear to have moved very much, at least in the last 4 years or so. In 2009, about two-thirds of Americans believed in evolution. About 3 out of 10 did not, and a quarter of adults believed in evolution but thought it was guided by a supreme being. So a lot of people were hedging their bets on the debate between classical Christian creation doctrine and evolution. Joining us to talk about the new Pew Research on the subject, Dr. Terry Mortensen, lecturer, writer, and researcher for Answers in Genesis and co-author of the book Coming to Grips with Genesis. Dr. Mortensen, welcome to Issues Etc.
Oh, good to be with you, Todd.
As you look at that, the newest research on what Americans believe about evolution, are you encouraged, discouraged? How would you gauge your reaction?
I'm not really surprised, and because the questions are not worded very carefully, and they don't necessarily define the word evolution precisely, it doesn't say a lot. Because a lot of people think evolution is, you know, dogs getting longer hair or shorter hair, and really the whole idea of evolution is microbe to microbiologist change. So, but the statistics, yeah, I'm not surprised.
When you say that the questions aren't worded very carefully, let's go into a little more detail. And I think you're quite right. Most people hear evolution, and they do think what would normally be called kind of evolution within the species. They say, well, look, I got a border collie at home. And
yeah,
that's a product of very careful breeding over centuries, maybe even millennia, to get that form, that shape, whatever. I guess I do believe in evolution. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what happens, because that's the kinds of illustrations that evolutionists use in the textbooks. And so they are showing what, in a biblical framework, they're just showing variation within a created kind. God created different kinds, and he built into those kinds the genetic potential to produce variety, just like he made Adam and Eve, and in their genetic code was all the information for all the diversity of shades of brown skin color and hair color and eye shape and in the human race. So that's not evolution.
I wonder what you think about the fact, at least according to the latest research, that about 75% kind of we would call that the vast majority of college graduates believe in evolution. That's much, much higher than I think the average there. What do you make of that?
Well, what I make is, it's very simple. The longer you're brainwashed, the longer you're in the education system that is dominated by an atheistic worldview, you're taught that evolution is a fact, that no scientists reject evolution, that you're never exposed to any scientific criticisms of evolution, you don't get your terms defined carefully, the more you're in that education system, of course, the more you're going to believe in evolution.
So in other words, if you are kind of awash in all the presuppositions as well as the assertions,
that's
of,
right,
of an evolutionist worldview, it will become, yeah, your default position.
Right. And the people that you know, are out, hardworking people, they haven't gone on to advanced education, and they're living in the real world, and they see that dogs change into dogs and cats change into cats, and a variety of corn is corn. They aren't as likely to believe that.
What do you make of the, as I said before, those who seem to be maybe wittingly or unwittingly hedging their bets? They believe in evolution in some, they assent to that word, but they think that it was guided by a supreme being. What do you make of that outcome? That's about a quarter of adults in the United States.
Yeah, well, Again, from our experience, I've spoken in hundreds of churches over the last 30 years, and they're all conservative churches. They're not theologically liberal. They would say the Bible's the inspired word of God. We find in Answers in Genesis that most Christians have not thought about this issue. Most of them haven't read very much. They don't know how to define the terms carefully. And so they feel that the tremendous cultural pressure of the scientific majority saying this is a scientific fact, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, apples fall off trees because of gravity, evolution is a fact. And so they believe in God, and so they want to try to harmonize the two, but they never carefully have looked at what the biblical text says and what actually evolution is, which is microbe to microbiologist change.
So it sounds like one way of summarizing your take on the latest Pew research with regard to American beliefs about evolution is that while opinions may be held or even strongly held by a majority of Americans one way or the other, when it comes to those opinions, they're not very well informed.
That's correct. And that is also a problem, Todd, in evangelical academia. Most of our theologians and Bible scholars are not well informed, which is why we're battling a growing number of a growing percentage of people in evangelical institutions of higher education, seminaries and Christian universities, that are open to theistic evolution, but they're even open to the idea that there never was a literal Adam and a literal fall. And I've interacted with a lot of these people, and their ignorance of creation scientific criticisms of all of these ideas and the actual biblical text is really shocking.
And since you mentioned that, you know, to dismiss the existence of Adam and Eve and of the fall is to open a theological can of worms that extends all the way up to the foot of the cross, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, you then have Jesus dying for a mythological problem, and that destroys the gospel.
So how would you, if you could have like 5 minutes to educate the average American on what is really meant in the scientific community by evolution, not their dog, you know, I got one breed or another, but what's really meant there and what the Bible really teaches with regard to the origins of the world and of life, how would you kind of do that little mini seminar?
Well, I would say evolution is really a three-part theory to explain all of reality on the basis of time and chance and the laws of nature. So you have the evolution of stars and galaxies and the solar system. That's what I would call cosmological evolution from the Big Bang. And then you have geological evolution, picking up the story when the Earth is a hot molten blob going around the sun, and it cools and condenses and develops a hard crust, and it evolves an atmosphere, and it eventually, over millions of years, it becomes the planet we live on today, with rock layers. And then biological evolution, which picks up the story about 3 billion years ago when the first single cell organism popped into existence by chance from chemicals in the primordial oceans, and over millions of years of a blind, purposeless, directionless process of natural selection and mutations, that single-celled creature multiplied and diversified into all the plants and animals and people that have ever existed on this earth. That's evolution, and that is totally incompatible with the biblical account of creation in Genesis 1.
And that is the claims of this, just to take the last chapter, so to speak, of what you just mentioned there, of biological evolution. The claims there, while they're often presented as very modest in the evolutionary community, well, you know, these things just happened. They had to have happened because here we are talking about them. They're presented as very modest claims. They are, in fact, astoundingly gigantic claims about not only where the first living thing came from, but how it became every living thing.
That's right. That's right. And ultimately, the evolutionary view is an atheist view of the origin and history of the universe. And it's religion masquerading as science, with smoke and mirror arguments and illustrations that deceive most of the world into thinking it's scientific fact.
I guess I got to ask then the other side of the equation. What would you say to that same person if they say, well, you know, I believe in creation, but my view of creation is kind of a halfway house here. I got a kind of a vague picture about how maybe man was created originally as some kind of a creature, and then he's evolved over time to be a full-blown Homo sapien. They have that kind of muddy view that you mentioned before.
Yeah, yeah.
How would you give them the few-minute seminar on what the Bible actually teaches about these things?
Well, what I would say is the issue is not whether there's a God nebulously defined. The issue is God the God of the Bible, and if he is his word true? And it's not a question of whether God created, it's a question of whether Genesis is true and if it's literal history. And the book Coming to Grips with Genesis that I co-edited and contributed to is a 14 author work. Most of them are seminary professors arguing that Genesis is literal history, and it literally teaches a literal 6-day creation, just like our 6 days in a week. And in those days, God created in a certain order. He created the earth before the sun, moon, and stars. Created the plants before he created sea creatures and birds. He created birds before he created dinosaurs, land animals. All of those orders in Genesis 1 contradict evolution theory. And he created man, Adam, literally from the dust, and Eve literally from the rib of Adam, distinct from the animals, and made uniquely in the image of God. And then sin came into the world through Adam when he rebelled against God. That brought death and disease and suffering, the curse of God on the whole creation. So we don't live in the original very good creation that God described in Genesis 1. We live in a fallen world. It still bears the evidence of God's creative handiwork and genius. But it also bears the marks of his judgment. And Paul says we live in a creation that is groaning in bondage to corruption, waiting to be liberated when Jesus comes again and creates a new heavens and a new earth. And so Jesus came into the world to solve the problem that started in the garden, and he destroyed the world at the time of Noah's flood. That's the key to understanding the geological record of rock layers and fossils. And so if we mess with Genesis, then we're really saying, well, I don't really believe what God said, and I'm going to think of creative ways to try to make it fit what the evolutionists say. And what we're really doing then is we've elevated the majority view among scientists as the final authority of truth, as the grid for interpreting the inerrant word of God. And that's disastrous for biblical authority.
Dr. Terry Mortensen is a lecturer, writer, and researcher for Answers in Genesis. He's co-authored the book Coming to Grips with Genesis. You can find out more about Answers in Genesis at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Mortensen, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Good to be with you, Todd.
When we come back, Chris Roseborough is going to join us, a regular guest every week. We do This Week in Pop American Christianity. We're going to take a couple subjects. Life Church pastor Joel Wilkie's plan to preach this Sunday, the basis of his sermon for Super Bowl Sunday, will not be a Bible passage, but in fact, television commercials. I suspect probably Super Bowl television commercials, pastor preaching on commercials. Pastor Robert Morris of Gateway Church in Dallas-Fort Worth on tithing. He has a very interesting view there. And then we'll talk about Pastor Ryan Meeks of Eastlake Church in Bothell, Washington, explaining his change of mind about homosexuality. That's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith for the remainder of this hour and on into the next. And then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last 20 minutes. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. How does confessional Lutheran theology measure up against popular yet false worldviews, ideas, and religions? Find out at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Friday, February 6th and Saturday, February 7th at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Meet and hear regular guests Chris Rosebro, Dr. Joel Heck, and others at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 6th and 7th in San Antonio. flc-sa.org, flc-sa.org.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries, right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.